But first, it's the Observation Deck with Gordo, brought to us by A Number One Air.
Yesterday at this time, we talked about Larry McMurtry's typewriters going for $38,000 at auction to Hermes 3000 typewriters that he typed Lonesome Dove on. And I started talking about how I wonder if Tom Hanks bought them or that other rich dude in L.A. that buys all these old typewriters. But it did get me to thinking about bizarre collections people have. Like Tom Hanks, I would have given you 1,000 guesses. What does Tom Hanks collect? You wouldn't have guessed typewriters.
Nope.
That's such an odd collection. But there are other bizarre celebrity collections. To guys, the Jerry Seinfeld, Jay Leno one makes sense, right?
Cars.
Yes. Yeah. Both those guys are beyond rich, and they can have any car they want to, and they have a fascination with cars. And I have a fascination with cars, too. I was bitten by that bug when I was a kid. I loved my family cars. Every time I got a new car, it was such a huge deal. And I even went back after I became an adult and bought one of my favorite family cars, which was a 1974 Buick Electra.
How's it running?
It's up on blocks, George, to be quite honest with you.
Okay.
Thanks for bringing that up. Sensitive subject. But the idea of celebrity collections doesn't stop with cars and typewriters. I found a few other ones that are even more strange. Did you know Demi Moore collects vintage dolls?
No.
And Ashton Kutcher, her ex, said that they creeped the blank out of him.
Yes, I would agree with that.
There are some people that have true phobias of dolls. Like they can't stand the dolls with their eyes just looking at you all the time and sitting up on a shelf judging you constantly.
It never bothered me, but I could see where it would be creepy.
Yeah, I was never bothered by dolls either. But when you get a lot of them, like the old crazy woman that collects dolls, and you go into her house, she lives alone, and her living room is lined with shelves of dolls looking at you, that does creep me out. There's something very John Wayne Gacy about that woman that does that. But my mother used to collect these Madame Alexander dolls for my sister. My mom was big on collections that she would collect for other people, which was her little workaround. So, yeah, she collected Madame Alexander dolls for my sister. I remember for me, it seems like it was versions of Noah's Ark. It could be like a wooden version, antique toys of Noah's Ark. And I remember one time I had a kerosene lamp collection.
I mean, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I only had like six of them. I was a kid, right? Oh. I was like 10 years old. But I used to love to burn those kerosene lamps and love the smell of that kerosene. And I can't believe my mom used to let me have those in my room.
Yeah.
It seems so dangerous. So dangerous. I had a stamp collection, which, Craig, you also had a stamp collection.
I was a short-time member of the Oklahoma City Stamp Collectors Club.
What did you guys do in that club?
You load up your party?
The only thing I remember us ever doing, I was in the club with Bill Wasinger, my friend from down the street, and all we did was do hood rat stuff. We went to a meeting once, and we left early and got a fire extinguisher out of the hallway, and we set it off. That's all I did at Stamp Collecting Club.
What's the name for stamp collectors? There's a...
Necrophiliacs?
I don't know about that.
Man.
I don't know. I'm just spitballing here.
I don't know.
What is it? It's coin collectors or pneumatist. What are they? They have something weird.
Let me look. Philatelic? American Philatelic Society?
Oh, that was an orchestra. The Boston Philatelic. Yeah, I had a stamp collection. Now when I think back on it, it's a very spare collection. Because they would be torn off of envelopes and stuff. And
it
was just real dirty looking. And
see, I had a great one. I used to go to these conventions and you would buy them. You get these little hinges that you would mount them into your album on so it didn't disrupt the stamp. Or when a new stamp
didn't
would come.
Disrupt the stamp.
See, I was told to choose a genre. So I chose, of course, sports stamps. You'd be amazed how many sports stamps there are worldwide. So whenever the U.S. Postal Service would come out with a sports stamp, I would go to the post office and request a plate block of stamps.
Plate block?
Or a sheet. Mm-hmm. They would give you either the corner of a sheet or an entire sheet of like Major League Baseball stamps. They came out with a stamp one year. Yeah, I loved it. It was great. And the artwork on some of the stamps and the international sporting heroes that were paid tribute to by they were given a stamp by Belgium or something.
Yeah, when I was a little boy and, oh man, look at this, a Dutch stamp.
Mm-hmm.
And people in our church knew that I collected stamps, so then they would give me, you know, stamps that someone from, you know, a relative from Asia had sent them, and then I'd have that, and it was like, oh my, this came all the way from over there. So there was some sort of magicalness to it, but because of it came from all over the globe, it was like, it was like being transported.
Boy, now that I'm just thinking about it, it makes me want to
collect stamps.
Yeah, I wish I had my collection. I don't think I saved it.
How many kids today collect stamps?
George says zero, and I think he's probably close.
Mila Kunis collects Star Trek figurines.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. She and I are soulmates.
Angelina Jolie has a knife collection.
That doesn't surprise me.
She said she became obsessed with knives when she was a little girl. And that's something, basically every object that's out there, there is some sort of high-level collector of it, and there's a whole scene that you're not aware of.
Yep.
Like, I didn't know that knives were such a big deal until I think it was one of our P1s that said, hey, I'm a knife maker, I'd like to send you up a knife. And then I started talking to my brother about it, and he goes, oh, yeah, and my brother could name these boutique knife makers from all over the country, and you can spend a lot of money on a handcrafted fine knife, and there's just all sorts of terminology, and to own one of these, you know, these are all only going to go up in value, and I wouldn't have thought that. They're knives. It's like it's a bunch of technology you think we've replaced. It's like me and typewriters. We've replaced that technology. Why are people still into these things? Quentin Tarantino collects board games. Specifically, board games based on old TV shows.
Interesting.
So all these celebrities are kind of like us, and they'll scour eBay and the internet and spend their free time with their stupid little collection that they've got going for some reason. Quentin Tarantino, board games based on TV shows. Claudia Schiffer collects insects.
Weird.
Her whole home is filled with framed dried insects.
How interesting.
Claudia Schiffer. Wow. And she got into it when she was a little girl, collecting bugs and then drying them and then pinning them and then framing them. And now she's got a whole house in those things. Penelope Cruz collects...
Incest is best.
No, George, you're not hearing that correctly. And Penelope Cruz collects coat hangers.
That's weird.
I've never heard of anyone with a dedicated coat hanger collection, but she owns over 500 types of coat hangers.
When you think about it, there are a lot of different types of hangers.
Yeah.
Boy, I've got like 50 in my closet.
Right. And really, there's few things that are a nice little surprise in your day than getting a good coat hanger.
Mm-hmm. A good wooden coat hanger.
Yes. And you go, man, the jacket just slides so well over this. And then a bad coat hanger will curse you. You won't do anything about it for years.
Right.
You'll ride it out, breaking one coat hanger after another. If they're the cheap plastic kind, you're all flip. You grab another one. Meanwhile, if you just invested in, you know, 20 great coat hangers right away, you would get that pleasure every day, slipping something on it or off of it.
Mm-hmm. George, do you have any adult collections?
I don't. I really don't. I'm thinking that maybe I need to get one.
Yeah.
I don't think it would be hangers or insects.
What?
Or insects.
Such a tricky word. We need to change that word.
Next.
You know, Craig got back into baseball card collecting as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was interesting. Did you enjoy the process of going and seeking them out again and collecting?
Yeah. Loved it. And I finished my 1973 top set. It's back when the Rangers went to the World Series and I got into baseball again, and so I started looking at my cards again and realized I needed like 65 cards to finish out that set. And that was fun piecing that together.
And the card shop is magic.
It is. Yeah, I went to one in North Dallas and just, it was like I was a kid again.
Uh-huh.
It was great. And I'm looking at pictures of all these sports stamps, and it's making me want to get back into stamp collecting because some of them are beautiful. Some of the artwork and just like there's, you know, a set that the U.S. Postal Service put out of baseball heroes, Ted Williams and DiMaggio and Stargell and Dobie, and just the colors and the artwork, not only in this country but around the world on all these sports stamps. It's really cool.
Hasn't eBay been a wonderful thing?
Yes.
Here you can get rid of old stuff that you don't want that would be going to a landfill, and somebody out there wants it. And I've not gotten around to selling things on eBay. I don't think I've ever sold anything on eBay. I've bought tons of stuff on it. Anything you can think of from your past, it's on eBay.
Yeah.
And you talk about a time travel. That is a time machine going on eBay, looking at the old toys from your youth.
Mm-hmm.
If you're curious about, man, we used to have this thing that was kind of like something or another, and then you get to play the keyword roulette of trying to figure out how you can zero in on what that thing was
mm-hmm.
that you remember, and you discover the actual name for it. It's out there, and someone's selling it, and then celebrities are probably collecting it.
Wow.
They like to waste time just like us.
All right, Gordo, thanks. That's the ODEX 642 on the ticket. 7:15, let's muse in the news with Gordo, brought to us by D&M Leasing and All-Pro Foundation Repair.
Thank you, Junior Man. Disturbing story coming from a local school. Carrollton police have arrested a high school science teacher on charges that he recorded female students in various stages of undress.
This is awful.
George Edwin Thomas III.
Hello.
Age 54 of Highland Village. Charged with 6 counts of invasive visual recording, he used hidden devices at R.L. Turner High School.
Mm. In
the 2015-2016 school year. That's George's alma mater, and with more information on this important story, here is our R.L. Turner senior correspondent, George Dunham.
I don't know if I have more information than what you have. It's disturbing because I am an R.L. Turner alum, and I have friends that I went to school with, and their kids go to school there now, or have in the last couple of years, and yeah, they're really bothered by this. It's really disturbing, especially the apparent lengths that this guy went to try to get video is just
okay
sick.
Now my story doesn't have where all he put these cameras and how
apparently
much of an effort he made
in the girls' locker room, I think, and girls' bathrooms and
under desks.
Oh my goodness,
it's a sick dude.
Okay, once again, I don't understand the guy that does this, what's in his mind, but why is this to him so much more preferable than going online and looking at the host of visual images that we all have at our disposal?
It seems like
this is so much more work.
And risky.
Right.
Riskier than just going online and taking advantage of all that free stuff. He's facing prison time
yes.
now.
So is this because he wants people that he knows?
That has to be it. There's an extra thrill in it for him because it's somebody that he either knows or has day-to-day contact with.
Mm. District officials made aware of the allegations on February 22nd. They put him on administrative leave, and they are cooperating fully with authorities, as you would expect. He teaches a number of biology courses there at R.L. Turner, according to his profile on the website of the district. But Denton County records show that he was arrested on multiple harassment charges back in 2010.
What's he doing teaching?
I don't know. I guess you can be a harasser and a teacher.
Did you see how he was found out?
Uh-uh.
His girlfriend...
Oh, no.
...found, I don't know what it was, like a zip drive or something, and she plugged it in, and it was all these videos of these high school girls. And she immediately called the cops.
Oh, my. You think he looked creepy?
Yes.
He looks real creepy.
Yeah.
Well, he's not even really looking at the camera.
And he was their track coach, is that right? The girls' track coach? So
yes.
He was getting into the locker room and
mm-hmm.
planting cameras. God, creep.
Mm. You always wonder about the public restroom, whether there's cameras in there.
Never think about it.
Boy, I do.
I think about cameras a lot in public, but I've never really thought about it in the bathroom.
Yeah, Yeah, I'm also bugged by the fact that we're always under surveillance. Like, at any moment, you probably got a surveillance camera turned on you.
Yep.
When you're moving about your day. But, yeah, going into any public restroom, I'm convinced that pervs have wired just about every restroom.
Really?
Yeah.
Wouldn't and it you be know, obvious, though?
No, no, really? That's the thing, is that with today's technology, hidden cameras mm-hmm. are affordable and obtainable. Mm. And I think that the way that they are, this is my paranoia, that the way that they're hacking into this and videotaping all of our penises is they put them in the infrared sensor that auto flushes the toilet. They're back behind that little glass.
Interesting.
Yeah. Man. It's my theory. You don't think about that?
No.
When you see the little red HAL 2000 light looking at you from behind the auto flusher?
No.
Hello, Craig. That is a nice penis, Craig. Gross.
Looks like I need a wide-angle lens for this one.
Okay. Penis cam would never say that to you. Yeah, that's where I think that they're located.
Okay.
Remember that other really disturbing story we had a few years ago? I think a guy hooked up a device. This was not a camera, but I think he also had cameras in the restroom. But he hooked up a device to collect the yellow of young boys.
No.
Do you remember that story?
No.
Oh, it was so disturbing. Yeah, he had somehow rigged the urinal where he could collect to use for his own procreative purposes.
Good Lord.
Is there any way that he can create new life by merging himself with the yellow of young boys?
No.
It's like Seinfeld said, people are the worst.
And here's yellow.
Very, very true.
You like this song?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Me too.
We talked about the song a bunch.
I don't know about that claim.
That is a weird claim.
We used to always talk about this song.
We talk about this song a bunch?
Yes. We used to always say this is by far their best song.
Oh, I don't know that it's their best song.
Yeah,
it's a good song. Anyway, one day after...
Your memory's going.
What?
Your memory's going.
Are you with me, Craig? Do you remember us talking about this song?
We used to stop down and talk about that song. Jer, help me out here. Have we not talked about this song before on this show, I don't know, 85 times?
What song?
Okay.
See?
Not getting any help.
I mean, honestly, that may have been the case way back when, but I don't recall talking about it like in the last 10 years.
Oh, my gosh,
but
yes.
You made it sound like we talk about it all the time.
Yeah, your claim was, we talk about
this
song.
We haven't talked about it in a while, but we used to talk about this song all the time.
The Hardline references this as Corby's baby-making song.
how much can you say about the song?
Plenty.
Oh, well, okay. All right, one day after the Bush twins announced that they had just signed a deal for a joint memoir. As a matter of fact, I think they may have already written it. Who knows? Called Sisters First, Stories from Our Wild and Wonderful Life. It's going to be published on October 21st. One day after that, George W. Bush's Portraits of Courage tops the U.S. nonfiction bestseller list.
Huh.
He's got a bestseller on his hands. This is what he was on Kimmel promoting. The audio from that.
And all the proceeds go to veterans.
Yes.
Awesome.
Donating them to the Bush Center and its military service initiative. Bush's Portraits of Courage, a Commander-in-Chief's Tribute to America's Warriors. It's the full name of it. Are you guys thinking about going to see the exhibition of the paintings at the Bush Center?
Oh, I wasn't aware of this.
Yeah, I believe they're on display at the Bush Center.
Yeah.
I'd like to do that again. I'd like to just go back through that and tour it again.
Me too.
Oh, I love that place. And it's right here in town, and I haven't been back. I can't believe it. Just to sit in the fake Oval Office.
Yeah.
It's pretty kick-ass.
That was great. All right, Muser field trip.
High five. What?
High five me.
I'm not high-fiving
you. We don't have to seal anything with a high five.
No.
The number of homeless people in Dallas and Collin counties dropped slightly this year, but the number of those actually living on the streets has increased. How many people do you think were counted in the homeless census in Dallas and Collin counties? Give me a total. between those two counties.
And Collin County.
5,000?
3,789.
I was going to say 1,500.
Which is slightly a lot down. Of people. It says the ongoing shortage of affordable housing units is making it more difficult to get people off the street. So the census shows that the average unsheltered person has been homeless for more than 3 years.
Mm. So do places like Austin Street and the Bridge, do they turn people away? Like, are they
full? Yeah.
Are they on a nightly basis pretty much overflowing?
Yeah, I don't know. But they do. I mean, they will also turn people away if you are drunk or disorderly or something.
Yeah.
You know.
I just meant in terms of capacity.
That's a
good
question.
Have you guys toured the bridge? Have you seen it? I've not seen it.
Mm-mm. I've been through Austin Street.
I'd love to see that. I'd love to see the bridge and Austin Street. I haven't seen either of those.
I guess
it says the shelter serves 9,000 people a year, and it's full every night.
Wow. Okay. Because I was wondering why anyone would sleep on the street if they had the option of a shelter.
It's a weird deal. There's some homeless people that refuse to go to shelters. And I don't know why either.
That's
maybe
odd.
It's because they can't be drunk if some of them are alcoholics and they want to drink whenever they want.
I just like to get f***ed up.
Oh, that's just harsh sounding. The average age of a homeless person, Dallas and Collin County, what do you think it is?
Ooh, I bet I know.
You bet you know.
Yeah. 36.
I bet I know.
We'll say it.
I don't want to say it publicly.
How much do you want to bet that you know?
A lot.
Tracking down anything specific with him is impossible.
I'm going to say 42.
53.
Let me change it to 53.
No, you can't.
Seem impossible.
George.
Oh, George! Wow, really getting aroused by this story. What do you think the ethnic makeup of the homeless in Dallas County?
Oh, that's a good one. This is going to sound like a weird claim, but I see a lot of homeless people every day.
Okay.
Because I have a particular lap that I'm doing on my bike now, which takes me through downtown over to the Santa Fe Trail. So I go right by all these shelters.
Wow.
And
Craig, big timing the homeless.
I did. You know what I kind of do? Just because
the Beyond pose as it goes by.
I would love for the P1s to know how much that bike costs that you ride past the homeless, that you zip by them on. In your costume.
And I also I also pass a lot of the bridges where they have the tent cities.
Oh my gosh. Whoa. What a big timing that is.
So of the demographics that I see, it's pretty well split, like 50% white, 50% black. I don't see a lot of Hispanic homeless. But I do see a lot of white and a lot of black homeless. So I'm gonna guess 50-50.
Yeah, I guess it's pretty even too.
58% African American, 35% white.
Hmm. See, there's hardly any Hispanic. All right, my observation was correct. I'm telling you, I see a lot of them every day.
Gosh. On your,
as I'm zipping by on my
on your bike,
in my
that costume. Costs more than people's homes.
That is not true.
Your costume probably costs more than these people live on in 2 years. What percentage are male?
The great majority.
90%.
Yeah.
80%.
Why do you think men are more likely to be homeless than women?
I don't know.
I think it's because, and this is slightly outdated thinking, but I think in general, the pressure for the male to be the breadwinner, traditionally, I think it gets to them. And after a while, they just can't handle that pressure, so they go off the deep end.
But that leaves, if they're married to someone, then that leaves the woman has to be the sole breadwinner. She doesn't go off the deep end after she's the sole breadwinner?
No, because she most likely is keeping the kids and has to provide for the family. And women, I think, are less likely to be homeless because it's more dangerous out there for a woman.
Are women in general less wheels off than men?
I think so, yeah.
Like, men can do a lot of things that are really great, but they're very unstable.
Yes.
That's a hot sports opinion. 76% are male.
Mm-hmm. Pretty close.
Homeless there. And then this sentence from the story just really furrows my brow. Housing remains the biggest need for the homeless. That's in the news story.
Yeah, okay.
Housing remains the biggest need
for
the homeless.
That.
Yes. Let's see. Let me skip forward to get down here. Richard Simmons. You think he's doing okay or not so well?
I bet he's doing okay.
No, not so well. He was recently held against his will.
Well, according to the LAPD, they did a welfare check on Richard Simmons because there were so many rumors that his housekeeper was holding him hostage and preventing him from seeing people or making phone calls. But according to LAPD, that's all garbage. They went to go see him. None of it's true. They say they talked to him. No one was holding him hostage. He was doing exactly what he wanted to do. He had freedom of movement. He just basically said, by the way, he has not been seen outside of his home since February of 2014, so 3 years.
Does he still wear a tank top and little shorts?
They did not comment on that. But they say that he basically had a choice to break from public life, and he decided to do it, and that that's his right, and he was seemed fine when they saw him.
Okay. I guess that's good news.
Apparently, the LAPD did not see the housekeeper that was standing just on the other side of the wall holding the gun to Richard. Richard's side as he was speaking to them through the front door. So God bless him. He always creeped me out when I was a kid. And my mom loved Richard Simmons.
Oh, women loved him.
I never understood it because he was a fitness guy, yet he was really flabby.
It's because you're too particular.
He was awesome on Letterman.
Yeah, he was always funny. He was funny on Stern when he would go on Stern, too. Yeah, but I'm with you. Richard Simmons was a fitness guy who was flabby. And my dad loved Jack LaLanne. And I always thought, he doesn't look that big to me.
Who, Jack LaLanne?
Yeah.
He was tiny, but he was muscular.
He was pretty jacked.
He was muscular, but he wore those stupid, looked like a mechanic.
Jumpsuits.
Yeah.
Look like Norm.
Bluegrass musician Norman Blake is 79. Chuck Norris is 77.
Mm-hmm. Ticket's own.
Maybe we need to revisit some of the best Chuck Norris jokes. Take a run! Fire! That's not Chuck Norris. That's Charles Manson.
Are you sure?
That's Asian Charles Manson. Nobody. Singer Dean Torrance of Jan and Dean is 77. Not sure which one he is. Guitarist Tom Scholz of Boston is 70.
All right. He made his own guitars.
And invented liquid paper.
No.
Shannon Tweed is 60. Ticket's own Shannon Tweed.
She was the queen of soft porn.
Okay. Sharon Stone.
That's what I heard.
Sharon Stone is 59.
Man, remember when she was the it girl in Hollywood?
Yeah. Do you guys remember the famous scene? Why was that so famous?
I don't know, because it didn't show that much.
I need to go back and revisit that.
The leg crossing scene?
Yeah.
Yeah, for the time, I guess it was pretty racy.
Jasmine Guy, 55. Bassist Jeff Ament of Pearl Jam is 54. I think he wrote the Jeremy song, didn't he? Hmm. Rick Rubin, music producer, 54. Edie Brickell, 51.
Tickets
greatness.
On.
Why is she really? Have we ever had her on?
George and I kind of went to school with her.
Yeah.
In what North is Texas. That?
She used to perform, the New Bohemians used to perform when we were in school there.
Did you actually meet her?
I can't say that.
I did, yeah.
Did you?
Not in school, but just remember that a few years ago? I saw her in Austin and got to deliver a ridiculous ass whipping backstage. I'm just a big fan.
I'd love to hear a recreation of that. Is there a place where I can send off for the transcript of that conversation?
Maybe.
Actor John Hamm from Mad Men is 46. Rapper producer Timbaland is 45. We got Jerry Horton of Papa Roach. He's the guitarist. He is 42. Robin Thicke is 40. It's still a good song.
Yep.
Emily Osment of Hannah Montana, 25. Rod Woodson, 52.
Greatness.
Pam Oliver, 56.
Wow.
And turning 34 today, Carrie Underwood.
Oh, wow. Okay.
What do you think about when you think of her?
She of the pee dance every Sunday night football.
Oh.
All right, that's Muse 734 on the ticket. And a Friday edition of Gordo's Corner brought to us by Load Bearing Wall Pros and Baker Brothers Plumbing and Air.
Okay, we may or may not get to your phone calls and fantastic Friday fan feedback.
888-787-1310. Let's take some calls on abortion.
Well, George, it can be any topic as long as it's compelling. This lawyer swears that he didn't mean to do it in Miami. Stephen Gutierrez. was arguing that his client's car spontaneously combusted and was not intentionally set on fire, which is what his client was on trial for, to collect, I guess, insurance money. And the lawyer's defense is, no, it's spontaneously combusted. Well, while he's delivering these closing arguments in front of the jury, Stephen Gutierrez's pocket starts smoking, and he spontaneously catches on fire as he's arguing that his client's car spontaneously caught on fire.
What a show.
So he rushed out of the courtroom. Spectators and jurors were stunned. The jurors were then ushered out. Gutierrez returned unharmed with a singed pocket, and he said it was not staged. It was not a staged defense demonstration.
Mm-hmm.
It was his vape that was in his pocket. And we've heard about this before,
like,
right?
Yeah.
Batteries heating up and catching on fire. Now, the ones I've seen that have caught on fire are way more violent than just smoking. I mean, you ought to go and look at some of the footage of e-cigarettes blowing up. It's
scary.
Violent. It's like a little bomb going off.
Wow.
It's really crazy, the flash fire that starts. So they're weighing whether or not, by the way, his client found guilty. It didn't help if it was staged. And now they're contemplating whether to hold him in contempt of court and try to determine whether he did this on purpose.
Yeah, it's really suspicious.
Yeah, very suspicious. And then I got sent this. I was sent this by a friend. I was sent this. This was sent to me by a friend and several other tweeters. There's apparently a special that's going to air on ABC on March 17th.
Oh, yes. Right up your alley.
And I thought that I would play the audio of it. It's called Truth and Lies, The Family Manson. Why are you laughing at that?
It's just so up your alley.
It's a 2-hour documentary that's going to air on ABC. So let's take a listen.
It says, after the summer of love,
he was the devil incarnate.
Every one of you out there has tried to kill me, and I'm still here. Ha, ha, ha. Now what?
You know, evil is very difficult to kill.
When I stand on the mountain and I say, do it, it gets done. If it don't get done, then I'll move on it. And that's the last thing in the world you want me to do.
Yes. They lived in Beverly Hills. And if they could get to a movie star, that scared the hell out of everybody.
Manson has it all. It has glamour and movie stars.
You think this is, like, overproduced a little bit?
Yes.
Now, this, of course, is one of the Beach Boys talking here.
Glamour and movie stars.
Right here. We had gone on tour, and when Dennis went home, Charlie Manson and the girls were living in his house.
The toxic stew of it all was irresistible.
Manson's goal in life was to become a bigger rock star than the Beatles.
If he had gotten a recording contract, none of this would have happened.
That's probably the worst homicide scene I've ever seen.
There was blood all over the place.
At one point, he leaped across the counsel table at the judge, screaming, "Someone should cut your head off, old man."
You flatter me with all your attention. Now you're the focus of my affection.
I never told anybody to do anything other than what they wanted to do.
And if they wanted to do murder, that was okay with you?
That was none of my business, woman. I'm a convict. I'm an outlaw. I'm a rebel. I'm not a Sunday school teacher.
You know, everybody likes to see.
Everybody wants a picture of you,
Charlie.
Everybody likes that evil character. They created, you know, that guy with the eyes.
The door opened, and Charlie Manson stood there and looked up at me and said, "You can't leave the group."
He said, "The first time I came as Jesus, and they crucified me, so this time I'm coming as the devil."
Have a good day.
The Family Manson, Inside the Eyes of Madness, the 2-hour true crime documentary, Friday, March 17th at 9, 8 central on ABC.
Oh.
Manson.
You like that voice?
No, I don't.
Why not?
Because it's annoying.
But it's so serious.
I know.
Inside the Eyes of Madness.
And that was Mike Love that was being interviewed.
So who was it that came back and Manson was living in his house?
Dennis Wilson from the Beach Boys.
Wow.
They recorded one of his songs.
Yeah.
The Beach Boys actually recorded the Manson song.
He hung out with them there for a while.
Manson's now 82 and is serving 9 concurrent life sentences at the Corcoran facility there in California. 82. How does someone like him make it to 82?
I don't know.
Because he had a hard upbringing. I mean, you look at his... I believe he was the son of a teenage mother who was a prostitute.
Mm.
Very affected by lack of a father. He was real small, too.
5'2".
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Very small. So, this... This documentary is going to feature never-before-seen video of interviews that ABC had done with him in prison. I guess some of it was hit the cutting room floor for the Diane Sawyer interview that happened back in 1994, which, by the way, that was his last network television interview.
It was?
In 1994. Yeah.
Wow. Man. Why the dry spell?
I don't know.
You just cut him off?
But does the prison control... The prison controls who interviews him or whether or not he does interviews at all, correct?
I guess.
Or does a prisoner have the right to do television interviews?
I don't know.
Seems like he did a lot of them.
I don't know!
Because I don't understand why someone's not out there every week interviewing him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand how anybody can interview him.
What do you mean?
He's in prison! How do you get how does he get to be on TV?
Well, it's like what I said. I wonder if it's not a right. Like, they have the right to be interviewed. Or whether maybe the warden, whatever warden he's got now, won't let him be interviewed.
You know, it probably varies state to state or facility to facility.
Wasn't Rhines like a big pen pal of Manson?
No, John Hinckley. Hinckley.
John Hinckley was a big pen pal of Manson?
Yeah.
No.
Would you interview Charlie Manson if you had the chance?
Sure.
No. George?
Can you imagine how many segments we would get out of that?
Oh, my
gosh.
Yeah,
I would defer to you. I would
Could
let
you imagine how big our ratings would be? Don't forget, coming up next week, Gordon's 5-part interview with Charlie Manson.
That'd be great.
Yeah, who's crazier?
As we do dueling Mansons. I'd do fake Manson and he'd do real Manson. We'd see who's more Manson.
Do you remember the Diane Sawyer interview?
I don't, but let me guess that she talked like this.
Yeah, I don't remember it either. I'm just thinking we need to review it at some point.
How many people did they kill at Roman Polanski's house? Do you remember that?
Three?
Three. No.
More?
5. Can you name them by heart?
Sharon Tate.
I don't know if I can do this.
Sharon Tate.
Yeah.
Her
Sharon
born
Tate.
Child.
I don't think that's counting
that?
The actual death toll. No.
Not Roman Polanski.
No.
I don't know. She's the only one I know.
Sharon Tate, Abigail Folger, Wojciech Frykowski, Steve Parent.
Oh, he just rolls right off his
tongue. Look at him.
I can't remember the other one.
You're a machine of death information.
Huh. No, that's not true.
Awesome. Don't call that
Man,
awesome.
I didn't command anybody to do anything they didn't want to do.
Wait.
That's genius. He only told them to do what they wanted to do.
Well, it sounds like we have a back and forth between TC and Charles Manson here.
Oh, okay, let's take a listen.
You'll never get a bite better than a Bubba Burger. Goodness gracious.
All right, let's go to the phones for Fantastic Friday fan feedback. Jamie from Joshua. Joshua, you're on Sports Radio 1310 The Ticket.
Just
Jeremy? Jeremy from Joshua? I'm sorry. Hey, guys, I used to live in Tent City.
You did?
Yes, and I remember Craig. He would come by, and he would put a dollar on a fishing pole, and he'd make us do favors, and we'd never get the dollar.
Craig.
Man, used to do that.
This is a reference to the segment we had earlier when Craig was talking about how he would cycle on his very high-dollar racing bike past the homeless encampments while wearing his costume.
No. I mean, yes.
He would also have his pants filled with diarrhea from the long bike ride.
Right. Okay.
You know, not all of that is true. But the reason I brought that up is because I just wanted you guys to know that I see more homeless than you.
Huh. Yes, that's because true. You seek them out to taunt them.
No, they're on my route.
Gary from Galveston, you're on the ticket.
Yes, I need to speak with George Dunham, please.
Yes, he's right here.
Yep.
Mr. Dunham, this is Craig Bunchetson. I'm the assistant general manager of the Binghamton Bologna Makers. And, sir, due to your insensitive comments on this morning's knee break that was insensitive to women, smokers, and Anthony Michael Hall, we will be removing you from consideration from our PA job. And, of course, you'll lose out on the $14 a week and the lifetime supply of hot fries.
No. See there, Giorgio?
I was hoping to do PA for the Binghamton Bologna Makers.
Sam and Sanger, you're on the ticket.
So, serious sports hypothetical. You have a 30K point pickup basketball game. You got Kobe, Kareem, and Karl Malone on one side, MJ, Dirk, and Wilt. Who wins?
MJ's team.
Yeah, I'd probably default to whatever team MJ was on.
I was thinking Dirk.
Then why didn't you say Dirk's team?
Let's go to Josh in Dallas. You're on the ticket.
All right. Hello, boys.
Hey.
Hey, you were talking, doing a stamp talk earlier, and it brought up memories for me. Back in the early 90s, in the heyday of my stamp collection, I went with my family and spent about 4 summers in Estonia doing, like, missionary-type work. And so former Soviet Union, we'd go to these little flea markets and whatnot, and they had former, you know, Soviet military gear and, you know, hockey sweaters and all that sort of thing. But there were booths in there that had stamps, and I just remember going through and bringing home some of these books that had stamps.
God almighty, fine, jeez, whatever. Lord. Tell it to the Lord.
Gosh. Poor guy.
Stephen in Grand Prairie, you're on the ticket.
Yeah, I just wanted to see if we could get a RIP for beloved P1CR member Paul White.
Okay.
Paul in, what?
Are you at the crossroads, buddy.
Ah. Did we lose a good P1?
Yeah, that's no good.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, we lost a good P1. And I'm going to miss everybody. And I'm going to miss everybody.
What just happened?
Hello.
What?
What's going on?
Oh, my gosh.
That was weird.
And we'll end it with Gene and Carrollton. Yay. You're on the ticket.
Good morning, Muses. How's you guys doing, okay?
We're doing all right.
Fine, Gene.
Hey, listen, I got a couple of things. I was wondering if Gordon could get in contact with the Touchdown Brothers. So I would like to know what their comments on about all this hoopla with Tony Romo.
Yeah, we do. We do need to check in with those guys.
Yeah, you know, I'm saying, so, you know, you have, I'm saying, they made so much, you know, craziness about Tony Romo over the years, so that'll be a good segment, you know?
Okay, yeah, we'll try to get a hold of the Touchdown Brothers.
And you know, you're talking about collections, and I've been collecting old 45 records since 1955, and I have about 2,600 45s.
Wow, that's really a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. I spend it all through the years, and I'm saying I have groups, some of the greatest music, and like I say, everybody loved the groups, and you know, the Elvis Presley, the Fats Domino, and stuff like that.
You have some old Beatle 45s, those old Capitol 45s?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I have them, too. And I've been collecting so long. But you know, guys, on the 45s, the records have become so valuable. Now, anytime you see anybody with 45s and stuff in their attics and everything, they're valuable, because I have records that I bought for a quarter, 50 cents, and it's one particular record now I have is $3,500 for a 45.
Wow. Whoa! Which one is that one?
That's The Moon Glows, and that's called Merry Christmas by The Moon Glows from 1952.
Wow. Can you imagine? Man. Do you have Buckner and Garcia's Pac-Man Fever?
No, I don't think I got that one. But, I'll be looking for it then. Hey, you know, and one other comment I want to make, you know, you talk about the Beatles all the time. Their White Fantasy album, you know, that they when Chapman killed, Lennon.
What does this story mean?
They never found that album that he signed.
Oh, that he signed?
Chapman. Yeah.
Oh, really?
So,
would that be the most expensive album ever sold if they found Chapman's Double Fantasy album that was signed?
That's right, because nobody knows. They even went to Yoko Ono and see if she had the copy, and she said, no, we don't know what happened to the record. So now on the list of the most valuable albums, that's rated $525,000. Anybody comes up with that album.
God, I wonder what happened to that.
No.
Maybe one of the police officers picked it up, or
I may have that. You know, come to think of it, I may have that.
Hey, listen, you never know. Go through it and see what you think. But I just wanted to get that comment out, being you were talking about top hobbies and everything.
Also, Gene, do you have a 45 of, it was on the Mr. Pickwick label, of Playmates on one side and Little Red Schoolhouse on the other?
Well, I have to look, but I don't think so.
Check on that. It's my favorite 45 of all time.
Oh, yeah, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, tell me the title again.
It's called Playmate.
Okay.
That's the song, and it's on Mr. Pickwick. It's a pink label.
It's like a kid's 45?
Yeah, okay. Kid's 45.
Okay, so I'll be checking that out. See, because I have a friend in Philadelphia.
That's good.
He's got a warehouse full of 4 million 45s.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
He's got a warehouse.
A what?
And he's been collecting.
A wheelhouse?
My best friend. I've been doing business with him for 55 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's wild.
Okay.
All right, Gene. Have a good weekend.
Have a great weekend. Love you guys, and take care of yourselves.
Yes. Love you, too. Always nice to hear from Gene.
What a great way to end Gordo's Corner for the week.
Okay, so let's have a story of elderly sex.
Oh, no, we're running out of time, George.